This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
Good morning and welcome to The Breakfast Grill. I'm Roshan Kanesan. Ever wanted your own support team to help you with your physical and mental health, as well as financial planning and career coaching? Enter Nalari, a subscription digital therapeutics service. Founded in 2017, the company aims to focus on preventive care to better address medical inflation, corporate healthcare expenditure, as well as improve employee productivity. Now, the pandemic accelerated digitalization, and this looks to be the case with healthcare as well. By some estimates, the global digital health market is expected to spike 37% in 2021, with post-COVID-19 CAGR at just under 19% from 2020 to 2027. So how will Nalari tap into this growing trend? I find out with Azran Osman Rani, founder and CEO of Nalari Hidup Seren Berhad, the owner and operator of Nalari. Azran, welcome to The Breakfast Grill.
Thank you for having me.
So, Azran, before we get into the numbers and the strategy here, digital therapeutics, it sounds like a buzzword. What's the real meaning behind this?
Sure. Well, it is a subclass of digital health applications that deliver medical-grade interventions or treatments directly to patients using, number one, evidence-based techniques. That means there's proven research, clinically evaluated software that either treat, manage, or prevent a specific disease condition.
Right. So with that in mind then, where does Nalari fit in the current wellness ecosystem?
Well, you know, I think a lot of people are familiar with telemedicine type platforms, right? And they are, in a way, marketplace aggregators that match healthcare professionals with the users or patients. We see a new model emerging that we're trying to shape because there are three fundamental limitations with that telemedicine platform. Number one, it tends to be reactive and transactional. You expect the patient to reach out to get help, and it's a transactional one-off consultation. But chronic conditions, and these are conditions like diabetes, heart diseases, cancer, or even mental health, can't be fixed with a single consultation, prescription, or treatment. So you need a programmatic approach. The second limitation is that these marketplaces are very siloed based on specialization. So you see a cardiologist for your heart, you see a gastroenterologist for your gut, or a psychologist for your mental health. But again, these conditions are deeply intertwined. There are strong links between depression and diabetes, between anxiety and heart disease. So we want to focus on providing a multidisciplinary team to support that patient or that client right in the center. And third, right, these healthcare applications tend to be very activity-based, right? That means you pay for a consultation or prescription, or you track your steps or calories. But what we want to move the industry towards is outcomes-based, meaning actual health improvements that are measurable. For example, at least a 5% weight loss, because that reduces your risk of diabetes and heart disease by 30 to 50%. You know, at least a 10% reduction in your cholesterol, or a significant improvement in your depression and anxiety, so that payers in the industry feel like, you know, when they're investing in, you know, various treatments, it actually leads to real health improvements.
Metrics are really important, especially when we take a look at our health. But my personal concern here is that do we then maybe start obsessing about numbers, right? Because a lot of times when we take a look at GDP numbers, everyone's obsessed about the number itself, but not really the underlying system itself. How do you alleviate some of these concerns then?
Yeah, that's a very good point. And that is why also we have to look at mental health together with physical health. So it's not just your HbA1c blood sugar level or your cholesterol levels, but how are you feeling in terms of, you know, your levels of stress, your anxiety, right? Whether you're, you know, emotionally fulfilled, and the quality of your life. So these are things that, in a way, we do use numbers, but it provides a more broad or holistic perspective or view of health. So it's not just based on physical health markers.
Let's talk about the money now, right? And a big part here, actually, you just recently raised, congrats, $5 million US dollars in Series A funding. And tech portal DNA noted that this gives you a rough valuation of around $29 million. Your pre-Series A funding, Azran, was around $1.1 million. That was about early last year, if I'm not mistaken. And that gave you a runway of around 12 to 15 months. How much more of a runway does this $5 million buy you?
Well, we're hoping to complete our Series B fundraising round before the end of next year. It gives us about 18 months, so at least until sort of like the second quarter of 2023. But our goal is to try to complete that Series B round before the end of next year.
And at this juncture, what is Nottery's annual revenue, or at least a ballpark picture here?
Sure. Well, generally, when a company achieves a Series A valuation, typically in Southeast Asia, that means your annual revenue run rate has exceeded at least like $1 million in your revenue, because that means that there is stronger evidence of product market fit. And interestingly, with COVID, we achieved that metric at around September last year, tripling what would have been our monthly revenues at around February, March, pre-COVID. So COVID actually helped accelerate digital health adoption, and that led to a tripling of our revenue base.
Right. So you've broken past that $1 million barrier. Was it a sustainable boost to your earnings, or was it a kind of a blip? Because we saw like Netflix earnings last year, not to compare health with entertainment, right? But Netflix saw essentially a pull forward of their earnings, and they kind of stagnated this year. Is that a similar situation we're seeing with Nottery?
Well, I think what we're fortunate is that that momentum, that growth momentum, is carrying forward well into 2021. And the biggest thing that we're focused on is our client renewal rate, because we think that's the ultimate validation of, you know, the product, right? Which means our clients are renewing the 2021 contracts at a higher rate than 2020. So we target a revenue renewal rate of over 100%. Of, you know, the revenue that we generate from existing clients needs to be higher every single year on top of all the new clients that we sign up.
Right. And is there a, I guess, any sign of a peaking in terms of the renewal rate, right? Because there's only so long you can go above 100%.
Well, actually, if you look at obviously benchmarks in the industry like Livongo, the first digital therapeutic to IPO and become public listed in 2019, so there's a lot of public data. What you'll see with their client base is typically their clients have been with them for 4 to 5 years at least, because unfortunately with humans, you know, we're not short of the various health conditions that we have to deal with. And one of the advantages of Nullary is we take a broad, what we call metabolic focus, right? So obesity, diabetes, heart diseases. We've started with cancer, kidney, renal, and mental health. So that's probably about, you know, I would say 60 to 70% of healthcare conditions in terms of recurring spend.
At past the $1 million annual revenue right now, are you profitable at this juncture?
So with our model, what we've been able to prove, and I think one of the important bases for that Series A valuation, is a clear path to profitability. Mm-hmm. So on a gross margin basis, we've even exceeded 40%. So when we first started at the sort of end of 2019, it was just about 10%, right? That means the revenue that we earn barely covers the cost of the human professional coaches that provide the service, right? But with scale, with the 3x growth, that number's triple to a 40% gross profit margin. And we expect that trajectory to continue. But in terms of net profitability, that's probably about a 2-year window before we get to that point, because of all the continued fixed expenses in product development, data science, and tech.
Do you have a timeline to profitability?
Well, I think the expectation is if we carry... let me backtrack. I think the key driver of Nullary's profitability is both the productivity or efficiency of our human healthcare professionals without sacrificing the effectiveness. So as a benchmark, right, if you only do telemedicine type face, you know, live one-on-one consultations, a psychologist, for example, would be maxed out at about 50 clients per month, right? But with the AI augmented tools that we provide our healthcare professionals, we've now, you know, on average crossed 400 to one, right? So that's 8x. But some of our more experienced psychologists have already broken 600 to one. So more than a tenfold increase in productivity. Now, based on the way where we are right now at that 400 to one average, we've reached a 40% gross margin, right? If we are able to push the average productivity of our team of healthcare professionals to reach today's top performers, i.e. a 600 to 1 average, that takes us to a gross margin level of well over 60% and getting into that net positive operating margin territory. So we think probably in the next 2 years.
Right. And Azra, I'm just curious, I'm not sure whether you have any data on this, but do you know how much the pandemic and the digitalization that came from that accelerated your own growth? How many years did it take off your own timelines?
Boy, I think that's a bit hard to estimate, because I think we went into this expecting to triple anyway, because that is the expectation of a high growth startup. But what was interesting for us with the pandemic is a much bigger shift on mental health, right? Initially, a lot of our focus was on obesity, diabetes, you know, hypertension. But mental health became front and center by about June, July last year, and continues to do so well into 2021.
That's right. I'm all for accessibility, especially when it comes to mental health and health. These are very big topics that we underestimate. But there always seems to be a trade-off when you go digital, right? There's always going to be that. And, you know, when you talk about a psychologist being able to do 1 to 50 in the physical world and then going to 1 to 400 online, the inner skeptic is immediately like that you're getting less effectiveness, but maybe you're paying less as well. What can you tell us about the effectiveness of the program once you take it digital? How much are people sacrificing from the physical element?
Well, so first of all, from a cost point of view, right, in, let's say what you would pay for a normal private single 1 hour session of therapy, you get support from a whole multidisciplinary team for a couple of months, right? Like doctors and psychologists and dietitians and fitness coaches, etc., for the price of that one single hour. So this is like literally a tenfold improvement in your cost effectiveness. Now, the second issue is supply, right? And this is the fundamental problem with telemedicine, because even if you know, you counted all the psychologists that we have in Malaysia, right? Our capacity to serve would be about 700,000 Malaysians based on a traditional live one-on-one model, which means if there are about 8 or 9 million Malaysians who need help, 80% of them will not even have access to care, right? So first, number one, it is some level of care is going to be better than no level of care. But interestingly, in our, you know, quantitative approach, right, for those who come to us with, you know, what we would call a clinical level of, you know, depression, anxiety, and stress, about 60% of them are able to achieve improvements. And that rate would be very comparable to if they had one-on-one therapy. The difference is this, right? Look, if you can get a proper face-to-face therapy, good for you, and that's a much higher quality experience. However, unfortunately, most people, because of costs, they end up not having sessions weekly, right? May just be once a month sessions. And that's where the problem lies, is because they're not getting that level of care in between sessions. But with Nalluri, you're getting daily small touches, but daily feedback, daily care and support. And so you're much more likely to stick to the programs and the actions that you've agreed to do, because there's someone monitoring you on a daily basis. And that's how I think this therapeutic model is a game changer.
Azra, we're going into a few messages right now. When we come back, we'll talk about the user base as well as what the future looks like for Nalluri. I've been speaking to Azran Osman Rani, founder and CEO of Nalluri Hidup. You may be listening to The Breakfast Grill. Keep it here to BFM 89.9.
You are listening to The BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
Welcome back to The Breakfast Grill. I'm Roshan Kanesan. This morning, I'm speaking with Azran Osman Rani, founder and CEO of Nalluri Hidup, the owner and operator of digital therapeutic service Nalluri. Now, Azran, based on the data I have here, and this is as of December 2019, Nalluri had 5,000 users, with 95% of them from corporate programs. You noted a 3x growth last year. What's the current size of your user base?
I think we're well past 25,000, probably approaching 30,000 already. And what's interesting now is that, you know, we're growing the international segment, especially in Singapore and Indonesia.
So well past 25 to 30,000 there. But I think a few years back, you noted that you wanted to see, I think, 150,000 active users in 7 years. And this was, I think, in a comparison to Livongo and how to become a unicorn, essentially. Are you going to be able to hit that 150,000 in the next 5 years then?
Yeah, so I think that's why, as a Malaysian startup, international expansion is crucial. And a big part of using the Series A proceeds is to fuel that, right? And that's why we're looking at markets like Thailand and Philippines on top of Singapore and Indonesia, so that there's a bigger base. And what's also interesting is that international expansion is in a way driven by our corporate clients themselves, because many of them, whether they're banks, FMCG company, transport, telcos, have regional operations, and they want us to provide coverage for their employees in these other markets. And so it's easier for us to get into a market, a new market, when there's on the back of existing client work, rather than trying to come into a new market cold.
Right. So I guess that's where the scale can come into. And if you focus on MNCs, right, and big businesses, kind of natural organic growth there. Mm-hmm. Before we move on here, Azran, do you know what the rough split between your markets are in terms of percentage of users?
Well, we're still right now probably, slightly less than 90% Malaysia. Mm-hmm. Because, Indonesia and Singapore, while they've started, Malaysia still is sort of like a 3x growth year on year. So Malaysia's growing from a big base and still maintaining a very strong growth rate.
Right. So I would also presume that a lot of that take up in other countries is because of the MNCs or the corporations that you have taken on in Malaysia.
That's right.
What kind of expectations do you have going forward in terms of a proportion here? Are we going to see Malaysia still remain that dominant market, but everyone else maybe hit 10-15%? Or are you looking for more equal distribution?
Well, ultimately, we want to be able to see Malaysia being less than 50% of revenue contribution.
Right.
But that's not going to happen this year, probably 2023.
So the Series A funding, that $5 million you raised, part of it is aimed towards expanding operations, as you noted, in Singapore and Indonesia, but also launching in Thailand and the Philippines. Mm-hmm. This seems a little bit aggressive in some parts, considering your size and relative newness, but mm-hmm. is there a particular reason for the rush to expand?
Well, digital therapeutics is a relatively greenfield market in Southeast Asia. There are very few players. And generally, when you're dealing with, regional insurance clients, pharma clients, they don't want to have to manage a portfolio of, multiple different digital therapeutics partners, right? So having a regional footprint, we think, is important because of the kind of upper end segment of B2B clients that we're focused on.
Right. And how are you, I guess, preparing or hedging against possible overstretching of yourselves? Because it won't be the first time before the startup overstretch themselves and then have to reconsolidate thereafter. How are you planning for that?
Yeah, look, ultimately, it is about, being able to kind of adjust very quickly as demand comes in, right? Because in a way, 50% of our costs is our what we would call our client delivery team. So the coaches, the support team to service these clients. So in a way, we want to make sure that we grow in tandem with revenue contracts, and that's why a B2B model is, I think, a little bit more prudent. It does take a longer lead time in terms of a sales cycle. But once you get it, when you at least have sort of a 1 year and sometimes a multi-year contract, you kind of know that there's some revenue stability over a 12-month period to plan your growth, rather than kind of a B2C model that could change very quickly.
Now, Azran, as I noted earlier, I like the idea of the service. I think it's important to get accessibility mm-hmm. In terms of healthcare and mental healthcare out there. But also the inner cynic kind of doubts, I guess, the viability, or at least the appetite for employers to fork out more money in terms of their payroll. So
yes.
What's the sales pitch to woo corporate clients? I mean, sure. I can understand some big companies wanting to do it as part of their attractiveness to bring employees in and things like that. But generally, what does the sales pitch look like?
Okay, well, typically, for example, in Malaysia, right, because we quantify health, and interestingly, with the data that we have, we can show that, when employees have elevated levels of blood pressure, sugar, cholesterol, weight, and mental health issues, they're typically costing the company about 8,000 to 10,000 ringgit a year, both in direct medical costs as well as indirect sick leave, right? And so when these people, right, with elevated risks are enrolled in Naluri, and let's say 60% of them achieve a clinically significant improvement, which means for that cohort, we can bring down that average to about, from 8,000 ringgit a year to 6,000 ringgit a year. And that's a 2,000 ringgit savings per per active participant in the Nullary program. But if they're paying us only 100 US or 400 ringgit, right, that is already a 5x return on investment. So that's kind of the basis for why people kind of appreciate that there's a direct quantifiable value. And moreover, for our clients who have been with us for a few years, they can now be in a position to say, hey, we want to move to a success-based model, which means we primarily pay you only for the people who achieve a successful outcome. But for those who achieve a successful outcome, if, for example, that's at least a 2,000 ringgit a year savings, being able to pay a success fee of a one-off 1,000 ringgit cost makes a lot of sense for proven success. So those are ways that we can kind of quantify the impact of improving employee health.
And so at the end of the day, it still comes back to the bottom line. Now, in terms of the B2B side here, I've seen some of the names that you've, some of the clients here, they include companies like SP Sitia, Petronas, Malaysia, Aviation Group as well. Are you specifically targeting the big corporates and the MNCs? Is that a specific narrow target you're looking at?
No, it's not so much narrow, but it is, this is the class of corporates that are, you know, much eager to invest in employee health, especially during this COVID-19 pandemic. Plus, they've got a much bigger base of employees, right?
Scalability.
Yes. And it is a lot, obviously, easier to serve, you know, a bank or a telco with, you know, thousands of employees. Although we do have clients with about, you know, kind of 100 employee base, where maybe between 10 to 20 of those employees have these elevated conditions that need targeted help. So there are models, but obviously, you know, it's not as, you know, a bigger size of our base compared to the larger corporates.
When you speak to your investors, what are they expecting from Nullary?
Well, look, clearly, you know, financial investors have very strong financial goals in mind. But I think what they like about, you know, how we've been building this business is that there are two paths. I mean, there's clearly that whole pure financial path towards an IPO because there is that clear path to profitability, right? They're seeing positive growth margins. They're seeing how we can achieve net operating margins because if it just means bringing our current average to already our best performers, which means it can be done, right? But secondly, what you'll see with this Series A funding is we have three strategic investors already. So the strategic investors are showing a keen interest in our early stages, which means they could also potentially be potential acquirers down the line, right? There's a pharmaceutical company, but there's also a diagnostics lab provider who's invested in us and in the sort of medical claims space, right? A Japanese giant in that space.
So you're not averse to the idea of a private exit as well. It's not IPO or die essentially here.
Right.
Because we are seeing consolidation in the space. But before I get there though, if an IPO were to happen in a few years' time, once you hit your profitability and things like that, what are the benchmarks that you're looking at? Is there a user base number, a profitability number, a margin number that will determine this journey?
Look, I think, you know, for then, that's probably where, you know, we talk about a 2023 timeframe where there is, you know, like net operating margins. I think clearly with financial markets right now, you can't really go, you know, it's much harder to go in on the back of just future potential earnings. You need to be able to demonstrate an earnings track record. So for us, it is starting point would be, you know, 2023, 2024, when the operating margin turns around and becomes positive.
There are various other apps out there, services, not specifically therapeutics, but, you know, the niche ones focusing on financial wellness, focusing on mental health. Yes. It's a fragmented market for the most part here. But what we are seeing is general consolidation amongst the general app digital space, right? There's a lot of money out there, a lot of specs looking for things to buy. Is consolidation the inevitable future in the space to achieve scale and profitability?
Ultimately, I do think so because, you know, digital health has been quite fragmented. There are people on the diagnostic side, you know, kind of bookings and consultations to drug deliveries and, you know, precision medicine, right? Our focus on therapeutics and behavioral health, you know, we would prefer to be really good at it, right? Let's focus on excelling and being distinctive in Southeast Asia, so that people who are ultimately looking to be the end-to-end aggregator can see that, you know, we would be a very valuable asset because of our depth of specialization in behavioral health.
Right. And on that note, Azran, thank you so much for your time and all the best going forward.
Thanks for having me.
I've been speaking with Azran Osman Rani, founder and CEO of Naluri Hidup Sriram Bahad, owner and operator of digital therapeutics service Naluri. And you've been listening to The Breakfast Grill. I'm Roshan Kunnison for BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U Mobile, unleashing unlimited potential every day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.